Pennsylvania,
Pennsylvania, Pennsylvania,
the son of democracy.
I love your valleys and hills, I always will. You're the one great state that I am always for.
Here is another in our statewide series of programs known as Pennsylvania, Keystone of Democracy. Historical dramatization showing the part our own state of Pennsylvania plays in the development and preservation of our democracy, in the life and success of these 48 United States. This series of broadcasts is prepared and produced by the Pennsylvania Historical Commission in cooperation with the State Council of Defense in order to acquaint you better with the glorious history of our great Commonwealth, Pennsylvania, Keystone of Democracy.
Pennsylvania, Pennsylvania, and no matter where I roam, you will always be home, sweet home to me, Pennsylvania, my home.
Hello. Is this the City Coal Company? This is Mrs. Smith, 122 Main Street, speaking. Send over 5 tons of chestnut, will you? Yes, that's right. 5 of chestnut to 122 Main Street.
Simple, isn't it? You pick up the phone, call the coal dealer, and a little later, tons of black, hard, clean, shining anthracite are delivered to your basement. But it was not always so easy. At one time in this country, people had no hard coal, had no idea that it would even burn. Today, a great industry in northeastern Pennsylvania, an industry with hundreds of well-operated mines and tens of thousands of skilled workers, is devoted to the task of bringing warmth, comfort, and convenience into your life. It is the story of this industry and its struggle for a start that we now bring you. Let us go back to the year 1769, back to the frontier village of Wilkes-Barre in the Wyoming Valley. There, Obadiah Gore and his brother Daniel, two blacksmiths, are at work.
Howdy, Obadiah. Howdy, Daniel. You think you can put a show on this mare?
Oh, reckon so, Timothy. If we can wait a while until we try an experiment.
Yeah, what you gonna do?
See that pile of black rock over there? Well, Daniel and I have an idea that we can make it burn if we get the stuff hot enough.
That's a good one. You fellas are just wasting your time. Lots of folks have tried that before. Yeah, when I was more foolish than I am now, I did it myself. Nope, won't burn.
Well, we're going to. We're going to. Obadiah and I have 3 ideas about it you never thought of. Now, the first
one... get a good hot fire to start with.
You crack the coal up in little pieces and let the air through.
And then you keep the bellows going.
Oh, sounds plum crazy to me. But I'll watch. Make a good story to tell. Hello, fellas. Hey, come on over and watch the great core experiment. They're going to try and burn black rock. It's going to be a miracle.
They're what, Timothy?
Well, I get the bellows going a little, Obadiah, while I crack up a little more.
All right, Daniel. Throw it on.
And put the fire out.
Keep the bellows going, Obadiah.
Look, there's a blue flame.
Land of living. It's beginning to catch.
It's burning.
It's coal.
It's stone coal. It burns.
My sakes, never seen anything like it.
It's burning.
Yes, the black rocks of the Wyoming Valley would burn, as Obadiah and Daniel Gore proved. A few years later, in 1776, the first shipment of this stone coal went down the Susquehanna River to an arsenal at Carlisle, where it was used in the manufacture of arms for the soldiers of George Washington. In 1790, a hunter named Nico Allen discovered an outcropping coal seam when his camp embers, as he expressed it, set the mountain on fire. Other deposits of the strange black rocks were uncovered throughout the region. At the beginning of the 19th century, enterprising men like Colonel George Shoemaker of Pottsville were convinced that such an excellent fuel had great commercial possibilities. To prove this, Colonel Shoemaker, a highly respected citizen of his community, went to the thriving manufacturing city of Philadelphia with 9 wagon loads of coal for sale.
Yes, Yes, sir, Mr. Thompson, this wagon load of Schuylkill coal is the finest fuel money will buy. Much better than that charcoal you're now using. If you'll put it on...
No use talking to me, Shoemaker. I ain't crazy enough to fall for such a proposition. The dang stuff won't burn, and you can't convince me nohow. Good day, sir.
It's taken me months, Mr. Kelly, to bring this stone coal here to Philadelphia. The least you could do would be to give it a fair trial. It burns better, gives off more heat, has less ash, is cleaner.
No, sirree, you don't catch me in that stuff. Stone is stone and coal is coal. No, won't take it off your hands at any price.
Being used all over northeastern Pennsylvania. It's better, I tell you. Gives off more heat, burns longer, is the best coal.
I said I don't want it.
Henry, it's enough to discourage anyone. I've been all over this town, seen dozens of manufacturers. All I've sold are two wagon loads. I'm about ready to give the rest of the coal away, call it quits, and go back home.
But you lose a lot of money, won't you, Colonel Shoemaker?
Yes, I will. It's cost me about $28 a ton to get it here. Oh, but it's not the money I mind. It's being called a cheat, a faker, and swindler. People just won't believe our stone coal will burn.
Oh, if we could only show them.
I'm going to. Mellon and Bishop purchased one of the loads for their rolling mill. Today I'm proving to them that if their firemen will only handle the coal right, it'll give the best heat in the world.
Colonel Shoemaker!
Yes, what is it? Come in.
Colonel Shoemaker, I'm glad I found you. You'd better hide. The police are coming. I never thought I'd...
What?
Yes, sir, they're after you. You know that wagon load of black stones you sold to the man with the red beard that runs
that... Yes, well, what about him?
He's had a warrant issued for your arrest. Claims you cheated him by selling nothing but rocks that won't burn. He says
this
you stole...
This is the end, Henry. You get the men and take the teams back to Pottsville. I'll go down to Mellon and Bishop's and prove at least in one place that I'm right. I'll follow along later.
What about the other seven wagon loads of coal?
Oh, dump it out. Give it away. I don't care what you do with it. But someday they'll learn. Someday they'll learn!
It was through the patient, persistent efforts of such industrial pioneers that the merits of hard coal gradually became recognized in the factories and forges of early Pennsylvania. But fuel that required a forced draft of air or a huge furnace was of small use in a kitchen stove or fireplace. It was Judge Jesse Fell, a resident of Wilkes-Barre, who took the next step forward and made possible the use of anthracite for home heating. One evening in February 1808...
To bed. It's past midnight.
Very soon now, Mother. As soon as I put some coal on the fire.
Coal on the fire? Why, Jesse, why should you do that? You'll only put it out.
I hope not. But I don't know. That's why I've been staying up so late, so the neighborhood won't learn about it and have a good laugh at my folly if the fire should be smothered.
But what have you done to the fireplace?
Don't be concerned. It's not ruined. All I've done is to build up a jam of brickworks on the side and then put up small iron bars across and in front to hold the fire. You see, raising the fire up in that way will let the air underneath and provide a good draft. Well, there's a good wood fire going now, Mother. Well, here goes the coal. Let's leave it, Mother. Tomorrow we'll learn whether I'm right or wrong. The fire keeps going until then. We can come down to a warm room. No fire to build. No wood to chop. Oh, that'll be real comfort for us, won't it?
The next morning.
Mother! Mother! Father, come down quickly. The fire's still burning. It works. It works. The grate is the solution. Our problem of heating is solved.
That fire, the first recorded glow of anthracite in a home, was to cause wide rejoicing in the remote Wyoming Valley. Deeply impressed were Abaya and John Smith, two young men then engaged in mining coal for the local blacksmiths.
Listen, John, I know we lost a lot of money last year when nobody at Columbia would buy those 55 tons we sent down the river. But this new great Judge Fell has perfected, changes the entire picture.
In what way, Abaya?
It's evident now that Stone Cold can be used in any home, isn't it?
Well,
and
yes.
That opens up a tremendous market, doesn't it?
Yes.
All we have to do is educate people. I'm for going back to Columbia. Take some masons along to construct suitable fireplaces and show how Wyoming coal should be burned.
Can we make any money out of it?
I think so. A ton of this coal is equal in heat-producing value to 2 1/2 cords of the best hardwood. It's cleaner, saves labor, and burns longer.
Oh, I know all that.
We can sell it for less money than the wood and still make a good profit.
Yes. Maybe so. That sounds good anyway. Let's try it. You know, we can build our...
The Smiths were successful, and within a few years, they were making shipments of coal even to New York. The War of 1812, cutting off the supply of fuel from Liverpool and Virginia, created a scarcity which the young anthracite industry could supply. But transportation was difficult and expensive. There were no highways or railroads, and the rivers into the coal regions were not navigable. It was not until canals were constructed on the Schuylkill, Lehigh, Susquehanna, and Delaware rivers that coal could be readily marketed. However, the tide had been turned. Ignorance, prejudice, and complacent satisfaction with old methods were rapidly giving way to a new and better fuel, to anthracite coal. Soon, from out of the valleys and mountains of northeastern Pennsylvania, was to come a roaring flood of black rocks that burned.
Anthracite first used to generate steam for industrial purposes at Phoenixville, Pennsylvania.
1835.
Anthracite displaces wood on Hudson River ferry boats.
In 1836, David Thomas of Catasauqua, Pennsylvania, was the first to use anthracite in the smelting of iron ore. And with the industry grew the towns and cities.
Scranton, Carbondale,
Pittston, Plymouth, Nanticoke,
Wilkes-Barre,
Hazleton, Mockinoy City,
Shenandoah, Frackville, Ashland,
St. Clair, Tamaqua, Lansford, Pottsville,
Minersville, Mount Carmel, and Shamokin.
Into a region containing the richest deposits of hard coal to be found anywhere in the world, the people came. They came from all parts of the East. From England, Ireland, Wales, Germany, Russia, Poland, the Balkans, Italy, to sink the shafts, mine the coal, run the cars, man the breakers, and send out a superb fuel to light the fires of the nation. Faced daily with danger and death, overcoming tremendous problems, they helped to make Pennsylvania the greatest industrial state in the Union, the great arsenal of democracy.
1941, Pennsylvania produced more than 50 million tons of anthracite. This, together with the bituminous output, equaled 1/3 of the nation's coal.
This coal is vital for victory. Today, the minds of this great commonwealth have only one aim, one objective: to keep bright the flames of freedom.
Out from the tunnels of the earth, down through the crushes of the collieries, the coal of Pennsylvania is roaring in ever-increasing tide. Today, as in the past, the men and women who make up this great industry are ready to overcome every obstacle, make any sacrifice, fulfill all demands the national effort may require. That is the role of Pennsylvania, keystone of democracy.
Pennsylvania, you're the land that I adore. I love your valleys and hills, I always will. You're the one great state that I am always for.
You have just heard another in the series of broadcasts, Pennsylvania, Keystone of Democracy, prepared and produced by the Pennsylvania Historical Commission in cooperation with the State Council of Defense. Help solve the national transportation problem by putting in at once your fuel requirements for next winter. Clean out and check your heating plant and make it last for the duration. Conserve, don't waste. Buy war bonds and stamps. And listen again next week for another chapter in the history of our great commonwealth, Pennsylvania, Keystone of Democracy.